Morning, everyone. Well, the plan wasn't to do this, but now that Pastor Barry has asked, I'd just like to ask my family and friends who have come out today just to make a special trip out just to support me. And I'd like to especially thank those of them who have, at this point, not missed one of my Sunday morning sermons yet. So this time I'd just like to ask them to stand. Yeah, you're standing. Before I start, I'm just going to move this, because if any of you have seen me speak before, I may trip over it. In preparing for today, I asked myself, if I was to summarize what God has taught me in my life, if I was to try to cram all the lessons I have learned into one little sentence, it would first be impossible, and secondly, how would I do it? Through examining my own life and what I've seen of the lives of my friends and what I've seen in my life of faith, what I've seen in the times when I have not lived my life of faith, I came to several conclusions. The one I'd like to focus on most importantly is that pain is a part of growth. Within this world, there are many evils that surround us. There are many things that happen to us as we grow. No matter how good of a person we try to be, bad things always seem to happen. And the question is, within these times, how we handle that defines who we become. I started to think in my own life of what experiences shaped me the most. What events in the lives of the people that I knew shaped them the most? And often I would find that my conclusions came to the trials and troubles that they fell upon in their own times, whether that be through unemployment, through death, through fear and despair, through failure of relationships, through financial situations. But often I found that it is dependent upon these situations, how we handle them, how we react to these situations, that define how we grow, how we change through them. And the question that was within that is, what is the cause of this pain? Often I found with speaking with people I knew who did not live a life of faith, often they would question and sometimes name the cause of these pains, of these sufferings, of these trials that they endure, as a presence or lack thereof presence of God. Now that kind of was a little bit of a paradox for myself. As I thought more and more about it, I thought, well, the existence of good in the world is only there by the grace and existence of God within our world. So if we remove God from that equation, if we imagine for a moment a world without God, without the good that is Him, what are we left with? We are left with a world that has an absence of good. So, vice versa, if we reverse this situation, the only good in the world is from God. Therefore, the good in the bad, any good we see in the world, any existence of a reaction of good, is God's work within the world. And without it, we would be left with nothing. So when we look at a situation, when we look at a trial of our life, we look at it and say to ourselves, is this really the cause of God? Is this really the work of God trying to test us, trying to make our lives miserable? Or is it the good that happens within each situation that is the work of God? For every situation, every pain, every problem that we encounter has a time when it will be over, has a time when we will come to find ourselves through the situation. And it is through that time that we find that that is God's work. It is in the midst of the situation that we find ourselves persevering through it. It is in the midst of our pain and struggles that we find ourselves enduring through it. It is amidst of these trials that shape us into who we'd like to be. So, as a result, if we look at the trials, look at the instances in our lives, and see how they turned around, if we take a step back and look at a situation, each of us, I'm sure, can at least picture one story or event in their lives, when they look back and see what was the turning point within that. What was the point in which things started to look up, where the clouds parted and a little bit of sunlight came down? It was the work of God. And for those people who I spoke with who did not call themselves Christians, at times in those situations in their lives, they found it just inexplicable how the change happened, how the situation went from bad to good. It was just perhaps some random act of kindness, perhaps some unknown bursary to help them through their school year, perhaps some random words of kindness from someone they didn't expect to help them through the trials that they were enduring. How we see these instances of good within our lives, how we accept them, also is the degree in which they affect us. If we keep our eyes down to our toes and say, my life sucks, this is as great as it's going to get, we're going to miss the things that are around us. If we keep our eyes on our toes, not expecting anything to get better, then we're going to miss the opportunity for things to get better. We're going to miss everything that's going around above us, beside us, and behind us. So it's in our trials, in our struggles, that we need to persevere, that we need to expect the unexpected. There's a verse in Romans, which many of you have heard before, which has found a rather very comforting place in my heart. For we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope. And hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. Rejoicing in our suffering produces hope. Can we all honestly say that in every trial we encounter, every problem we encounter, we have hope? It's not to say, Paul in this verse is not trying to say, when life goes wrong, just keep a happy face and pretend everything's okay. But what he's trying to say is have hope. Keep your eyes open for the good that's working around you. Expect for God to be there for you. And if we rely on God so wholly within our situations of despair, perhaps that would be the defining moment within them. Perhaps that would change the way we react to situations. Perhaps that would give us a new perspective when a next trial or adversity comes before us. Take death, for example. Everyone experiences the loss of a family member. But do we always see the good in death? Do we always take a step back and think perhaps good can come of this? There's a verse in Isaiah particularly that has once again grown a fond place in my heart. It's Isaiah 57, 1 and 2. The righteous man perishes, and no one lays it into heart. Devout men are taken away while no one understands. For the righteous man is taken away from calamity. He enters into peace. They find rest as they lie in their beds. Those who walk uprightly enter into peace. I think particularly of instances within my life where somebody who has had an unshakable faith has found themselves within a situation, within a sickness, per se, that many people who would have encountered themselves in a situation would have just given up, would have asked the question why, not in respect, but in anger, would have seen this situation that they have come to find themselves into as punishment. But in these situations, do we really look for the hope? I come to think, as every encounter that I come to now in my life, anything that goes wrong, anything big, I take a look at it and say, all right, well, presently, I'm still breathing, so this means I'm getting through it. Time is still ticking by, so regardless where I am in the situation, I am in the process of getting through it. And it is through a perspective like that that you can smile. To know that no matter how bad things are, you're getting through it. It's often that people shut down in times of despair, that they look down to their toes, not understanding, not wanting to understand, but just to accept with the cards that they've been dealt and to just fold. Is this really how God would like us to handle situations? Is this really how we can grow through situations? For if we shut down and just decide that's it, that's all there is, we're putting ourselves within a box. We're deciding this is the point where I am and I will go no further. Not to say that, once again, you have to have a huge smile on your face and go, tra-la-la-la-la, everything's perfect. But to just think that, hey, you know what? These are the cards that I've been dealt, but it's not the end. There'll be a next round, a next hand. And all I have to do is just focus on that. I've come to understand in my life through that, that many of the adversities and problems that people encounter, whether it be divorce, death, or financial situations, are never an end to something. Anything that happens in our lives is never an end to anything. But it's always a new beginning. If as Christians we remember that in hope we look at this, in hope we look at the problems that we encounter, that we think, from here I begin something new, then how we handle that will be different. How we look at a situation will be different. You'll be able to smile in the face of trouble and say, I am a follower of Christ, whom my belief is rooted, whom I trust, and through that, no matter what the storms of life can bring to us, we will always stay firmly planted within that. In concept, it seems fairly simple. In practice, it's one of the most complicated things I've ever encountered. I think anyone has ever encountered. And it is to each other that we must look for support. It is to each other that we must decide to look for love, to look for a listening ear or a crying shoulder. If we just bottle up our feelings and emotions inside, that's where they'll stay. And as many people who have known me for a long time will know, that just doesn't end very well. Because the emotions that we bury down only stay there for so long. They'll only stay there, bottled up in that container, for a time. It's only a temporary fix. The question is how we handle these situations. Now, many of you are probably saying at this point, yeah, that's great for you, but I'm a little different. Or, you know what, that may have happened to you, but I've got something way bigger. I challenge you to look at God within that. Who's bigger? Your problems? The problems that we find ourselves within because of the material things in this world, whether it be money, finances, employment? Or do we remember first and foremost that God is what's in control? God is who's in control? And for an infinite being working in a finite world, I'd say the odds are pretty good in his favor. In my own life, there have been many shaping events, many things that have happened to shape who I am and who I have become. The family that is here today has played a huge role within that. The friends that I have today who stand by regardless of the things that are going on are honestly a huge factor in that. Who we surround ourselves with shapes how we act and who we become. And many of us can say to that, oh, I don't think so. I decide what I want to do, and I decide what I like to do. But if you're only getting so many different perspectives given to you, a limited number of suggestions, then you're going to have a limited number of choices. If we surround ourselves with people who have a whole lot less faith and understanding than we do, then that will limit us. Now, not to say we should totally remove ourselves in society from those who are not at the same point in their place in their life, but just to come alongside others at a time who can support you. There's nothing wrong with looking to anybody for support. And it's through things like Sunday morning church that we find that. A lot of people will come to Sundays, I've found over the years, who come to Sunday, sing their songs, and go home. They say hi to people in the foyer, shake hands while they're asked to. But it's this opportunity we have right now to open up to each other, to find the support, love, and compassion that's needed to get us through our own troubles, and to even extend a helping hand to those who are in the midst of theirs. The challenge is to look beyond the stereotype of church and to look into the hearts and souls of those around you, to the person on your left and the person on your right. Do you know what they're going through today? Do they know what you're going through in your life? Because the design of the church was meant as a support system. It was meant as a place you could go to be with people who feel and live the same way you do. To go to people for support, love, and compassion, to help you through the problems you're having. And in first century Palestine, that was pretty big problems they were having, considering the church was being persecuted. What we need to do is look beyond the confines of our own heart. Look beyond the box that we may have inadvertently placed ourselves within, and to extend a hand to those around us. To extend it with sincerity in your heart. And not only to extend a hand, but to reach out for one. For that is the same act. To reach out a hand is also to open your own. To look for help is also to open yourself up to receive it. It's not whether we have come to a place in our life where we can handle most situations, but it's to open ourselves to a place where we can be poured into and pour out of. And that is the church. That is what it was meant to be. I've come to a place in my life where bits and pieces of things are starting to come together. Bits and pieces of understanding of how the world works, of how pain works, and how to handle that pain. Now, that's by no means saying that I have anything figured out more than you do. But what the opportunity is to open up our minds to share with others what we have learned. And maybe that may be through sharing a similar situation, listening to somebody who has come to a place in their life where they're encountering a certain trial, and you opening up your trials, your story. I took an entire course at Tyndale, which was designed of the art of telling your story. And you'd be surprised how much of that had to do with not saying anything at all. The teacher, Beth Veal, taught us that our story has infinite importance. But if we don't stand to listen to others, if all we're focused on is our own trials, then we won't hear what others are having to say. We won't hear what they have to say, what they want to say, what they may be too shy to ask. In reaching out your hand, you're offering understanding. You're offering the opportunity for fellowship, which goes beyond what we understand of the church today. Upon a friend of mine revealing some of the natures and trials they've come to, I saw parallels in my own life. I saw stories that were similar. And I can think of many people who I've been able to help in my life just by listening and just sharing a piece of me for them. To put yourself out there, to take a step out of your comfort zone and tell somebody something about yourself that may help them through theirs. Between everybody in this room, we've all pretty much encountered, I would say, the majority of situations that and problems that most people in their lives will encounter. Whether that be death, unemployment, sickness, financial situations, loss of family. And it's amazing to look around the room and say, in this room, there is somebody who has experienced what I've experienced. There is somebody who has gotten through what I am presently in. And if we really look around the room, and look for those people, it is one of the most profound supports we can find for our own. It is one of the most profound things that we can find. I was challenged for this morning to tell my story in a different way. At this point, most of you are probably thinking, all right, well, he hasn't really told us anything about himself yet. But this was supposed to be a testimony. And in the challenge that was to tell my story, I came up with something different. Something I've never done before. And something, to my knowledge, hasn't been done before. And I bring it to you in form of a story. The story of a father's child. My child was born on a cold winter's day. When he was born, when I first saw him, I saw my image in him. I saw it in his cheeks, eyes, and chest. He was made perfect and innocent inside his mother's womb, just as was meant to be. As I looked at him in his mother's arms, I smiled to know what endless things he would be able to do and just how he would change the people he would meet in his life, how he would make a difference in the world. Although I worried for a moment about the world he was born into, I thought about the kinds of evils and tragedies that were already awaiting him, the ones that would watch and wait for Samuel to fall. I placed my hand on his head and said, I will take care of you and will always be there for you. Remember that. As he grew up into a child, I kept as close to him as he would let me be, teaching him what I know of good, teaching him patience, kindness, and endurance and love. I remember times while my child grew that we shared together like no others. We would often read together, and in his childlike curiosity, he would ask me what I knew of the world and of kindness, love, and peace. And with an overwhelming satisfaction, I would look into his eyes and say, I love you, and listen to what he had to say. Samuel was always full of energy, and in him I saw that reflected the things that I had taught him. In him I saw the good things in the world. And while he was a child, we were inseparable. As my child Samuel grew, formed more and more now by the world he lived in, and less by the lessons I had taught him, I found that he began to speak with me less and less, until we spoke not at all. This was something that pained me endlessly, but still as a father I endured by constantly loving and being there. The life he had built for himself was a shadow of the lessons I had taught him not long ago. He no longer read with me as he once did. Often I would find myself reaching my hand out to him in good faith to offer my support and love, yet he strode by ignoring my outstretched arm. He is nearly 14 now. He no longer speaks to me at all. The times he does, it is with a voice and tone of anger and upset, nor does he read with me as he once did. His mother now finds herself ill. Much to my despair, Samuel blames me as the cause. He openly accuses me, claiming it is due to my inaction that she is sick and dying. The way Samuel now lives is a testament to the loss of value for the things I've shown him. Through his actions, speech, and thoughts, I can tell his appreciation for me has fallen through. Yet I am not discouraged. Time and time again, I keep my hand outstretched beside him. So the moment he feels the need to reach out for help, he will know, I am there. I am there and have always been there and I've never left. Samuel doesn't want to see the help I'm offering him. That as an action on its own hurts me to no end. What hurts most is when I see him acting as if everything is all right, telling everyone that he loves me so much, but inside his emotions aren't so. Soon he'll be living a divided life, one face and one heart both reflecting different things. Samuel just turned 16 a few months ago, and today is the day his mother died. Samuel's had it so hard these past few years. The loss of his mother hurts him in only a way I can see and tell, in a way no one else can see or no one else can tell because nobody knows him like I do. Here I am still holding my hand beside him, waiting for him to tell me what's on his mind, but still he won't. He acts strangely these days. More and more does he tell the world that he feels one thing but lies. He tells them that he loves me, but he doesn't. He tells them that he speaks with me often, yet he does not. Those around him think that he is a model of how a child should love his father. It concerns me a lot right now that in his life he's wearing fake faces and passing himself as someone different than who he really is. He says one thing and does another. I'm worried for the life of my child is not a life living what is reflecting his heart. He acts good, but it's not how he feels. He's living a double life, one that he thinks I know nothing about. It hurts me to watch my child live so recklessly, so dangerously. Sometimes I feel like there's only so much I can watch without acting in a way he can't ignore. But he is, as a man, made to make his own choices. That I will not change, I will not take that away from him. And I have to remember, he is free to make his own choices in life. I made him sufficient to stand, but free to fall. And right now, his choices are making him fall. And I am chasing him down, extending my hands, trying to wrap them around him, to let him know that I am there. So I'm still right beside him. Today my child is 17. And the other day he spoke to me for the first time in a long time. When he spoke to me, he did not speak in anger, but in thanks. For when I whispered into his ear, as I always do, I am still here, he heard me and cried. When we spoke, it was like he was a child again. We even read together. He read the book I wrote him and all my children. He told me his fears, loves, and hopes for the world. He told me what he was happy about and what was bothering him most. He reached out for my hand and embraced it, looking for guidance. He apologized for the many things he had done over the past 8 years, and I forgave him instantly. Absolutely. Without hesitation. He finally realized that I had been there for him all along. He even admitted to me that it was because of him thinking I wasn't there, that he couldn't see the help I was offering. He said he was wrong. He said he'd acted wrongly. And I told him, I love you. Even to your old age and gray hairs, I am he. I am he who will sustain you. I have made you, and I will carry you. I will sustain you. Today my child stands. Since receiving me back into his life at the age of 17, I have taught my child many things. Showed him the lessons I did before, as well as new ones. Every day we speak now. Sometimes only for a quick moment, and others for long whiles, while he tells me how he sees me work around him. He thanks me for my ever presence within his life. I've shown him many things in the world. I've shown him love, passion, compassion, grace, opportunity, more love, wisdom, and hope. And through what I have shown him, he's grown into a man that I am proud of. Through what I taught him, he strives to see the better in people and the better in the world. He strives to make that better. Through his coming home to me, he has been able to stand once again on his own 2 feet. Today, with my help, he now teaches others to do the same. He teaches them that through accepting me, that they can also build themselves into better things. Through accepting of my help, they are given a new life that is so much different than any life they had before. Through me, they understand what it means to live, love, and cry. My name is the Lord. Here stands my son, Samuel.
Let's stand and we're going to sing, Take My Life and Let It Be.